Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Republicans and Democrats have selected their standard bearers in this fall's election to fill the seat of retiring Republican U.S. Senator Richard Burr. As was widely expected, we learned this past Tuesday that former state Supreme Court Chief Justice Sherry Beasley is the Democratic nominee, and that Republicans have selected Congressman Ted Budd. And while national pundits say the race leans Republican, the outcome is far from a foregone conclusion, and there is plenty of reason to believe that Beasley will mount a well-funded first-rate campaign. Earlier this week, I got a chance to delve into some of the details of why Budd so easily bested former Governor Pat McCrory, and why there's reason to believe he may not have such an easy time with Beasley in a conversation with NC Policy Watch special 2022 election correspondent Kirk Ross.
Welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
It's great to be here.
As we talk, it is the day after the May 17th primary. You've been covering the Senate primaries and the Republican Senate Republican and Democratic races. How did this outcome, particularly on the Republican side, come to be?
It was not a shocking outcome. You know, going into this race, let's just take them one at a time. Going into the race in the very beginning in the Republican primary, the big name candidate was former Governor Pat McCrory, a former Charlotte mayor. And he was looking pretty good up until in the polls, looking pretty good up until January sometime. And that's when Ted Budd, three-term rep from Winston-Salem area, and the Club for Growth super PAC that's backing him and another super PAC just cut loose a lot of money and literally took McCrory down. The race was allegedly close going into the last week here. That's just not the case, according to voters. Budd took 58.6% of the vote. He beat McCrory by 34 points. And again, McCrory was leading in one poll in January by 10 points. McCrory only polled 24.6% of the vote.
We're talking about a congressman who won a very crowded primary, sort of a fluky mm-hmm. primary a few years ago, got himself elected to Congress, never run for statewide office, running against a Republican right. who had run for governor three times, been mayor right. of Charlotte, I think, seven times, and almost even beat McCrory in his home county, right? In Mecklenburg right. County, I think.
70 votes, I think, is how it stands with the unofficial.
The only one McCrory won. Is it the end of the career of Pat McCrory, as far as you can tell? The end of his political career?
Probably not, according to Pat McCrory. But I would say at least, 60, 70% of the GOP primary voters seem to think so. And I kind of think so, although, you know, egos are pretty big up in that level of politics, and there's always an open seat, and it's a pretty good job raising money and spending it and having a nice office and stuff like that, I guess. And now with the new Supreme Court ruling, he can loan himself a bunch of money and use his campaign contributions to pay him back. So who yeah. knows what that new landscape is going to yield in terms of candidates.
It says something about the Republican Party, I think, that they've had this person who was the proverbial titular leader right. of the party for so long has just yeah. completely been cast aside, and a new wave has taken over, yeah. it would appear, with Budd's ascendance.
We should probably note that he did pick up one key endorsement last summer from the former president of the United States, who is, I'm sure, spiking the football this morning about all of his candidates that won or had the election stolen from him or whatever he's going to say. So Trump's endorsement definitely made the difference, especially it raised his name recognition. It anointed him in a lot of ways for a lot of people. And former Rep Mark Walker, who also sought Trump's endorsement, possibly shamelessly sought it many times, traveled down to Mar-a-Lago for it. He got 9% of the vote, and he campaigned steadily through this race. And Marjorie Eastman, who was backed by Fred Eshman, she had a lot of money behind her, a lot of ads, especially on social media, backing her, million some dollars worth of backing, maybe more than that. She never got above 3%. And she came in just shy of 3%.
Kurt, what is the Club for Growth? Do we know who the heck these people are that have so much amazing sums of money to just shower on candidates in the states that they choose? Is it corporate money? Is it billionaire money? Who is it?
You could kind of call them like a chamber of commerce, an ad hoc chamber of commerce style, at least in the beginning, you know, club for growth. McCrory, I will note, in his last few weeks of Twitter meltdowns, you know, he kept calling them club for Chinese growth. They got a lot of corporate backing, of course, and a lot of international U.S. corporations. And so that's what he called them. Big super PAC, big business super PAC, very big player in Pennsylvania, where actually I got to really look and see where nationwide all of their candidates ended up. I know that they and Trump squared off in Ohio over the Ohio Senate primary, but they were on the same page. Trump and Club for Growth were on the same page in North Carolina, as far as the Senate campaign is concerned. They've pledged, I think, at least $10 million into this cycle, and I would bet you they're going to pour a lot more because we're about to have a much tighter race.
We're talking with Kirk Ross, who's a special 2022 election correspondent for NC Policy Watch, about the results of the Senate election, Senate primary election. And of course, Congressman Ted Budd will face former North Carolina Chief Justice Sherry Beasley, who won the Democratic primary quite easily, really didn't have any other high-profile competition. Beasley will be a well-funded opponent. One presumes that the Republicans have the advantage initially. That's what you've reported previously.
Yeah, and that's what most of the prognosticators will tell you. And these aren't people who just make up the numbers or are taking a wild guess. They are kind of looking at trends, and they're looking at the lay of the land. Beasley, I will note, did win all 100 counties. She took 81% of the vote. As you know, Erica Smith, who lost a primary last night for a congressional seat, and Jeff Jackson, who won one, were both running for Senate, and they both dropped out before filing opened. So Beasley cleared the field, essentially. For instance, she took 497,381 votes, according to the preliminary results from our State Board of Elections. Her closest opponent, James Carr, drew 21,688 votes. So that gives you a sense of how cleared the field was. There were, I think, 10 total Democratic candidates. So traditionally, in the United States of America, in a president's first term, his party gets knocked around a bit in the midterms to varying degrees. But generally, the president's party loses in that first midterm. And the feeling right now is that the House is very likely to go Republican. The Senate is a toss-up. And our race here originally was ruled a toss-up, but given the mood of the electorate, traditions of midterms, and Joe Biden's approval rating in the state of North Carolina, most people are going to say those are two difficult sets of headwinds for her to overcome. You know, I'm not so sure personally, because there's just a lot of aspects to this race. First of all, this is a historic candidacy. Would be the first Black woman to be elected from North Carolina to the Senate, and I believe the second in history. And there's going to be a lot of interest. I think people should just say there's unlimited money for both of them and not try to worry about counting the numbers. I'm sure the people in the campaigns are freaking out hearing that if they're listening, because that's the game, is raising money, right? But there's just going to be a lot of money and a lot of ads. And I wouldn't doubt that every last ad minute is being bought right now as we speak, all the way to November. This would be a good time if you watch YouTube. I'll just give everybody a piece of advice. If you watch YouTube or anything where you're not paying for ad-free, unless you want to see a bunch of things that are going to make you hate life, the super PACs don't come in and run happy stories. They run negative ads, and they're going to dump so much money on this state. I would go ahead and sign up for ad-free YouTube right away. If you lived in the Triangle, you saw Valerie Fouché anytime you wanted to get a recipe or anything, watch a video of your favorite band, you had to listen to a Valerie Fouché commercial first. And I think that's just going to be the case from here on out. This is just big money races, and we're a marquee race, and the Senate's in the balance.
We're coming to the end of our time in this chat with Kirk Ross, who's a special 2022 election correspondent for NC Policy Watch. I guess the last question, maybe it's wishful thinking on my part. Is there a chance, with so much money being devoted to negative TV ads that we know are just going to be excruciating to watch, is there any chance that issues could play a role in the final outcome of this Senate race between Sherry Beasley and Ted Budd? For instance, we've got the Supreme Court apparently on the precipice of ending the guaranteed right to an abortion for American women. Could that conceivably inject some life into the Beasley campaign?
Well, this morning, just before we got online, a couple of hundred kids walked up out of Carver High School, which is 2 miles from my house, and are headed to campus in protest over abortion rights. So we may find that Justice Alito has been the greatest youth vote motivator maybe in quite a while. And that's the kind of thing that would make a difference. If young people turn out in this election, motivated by abortion, motivated by climate change, then that's a different electorate. And that's a large electorate. And they tend to vote for the Democrat, even though most of them are registered unaffiliated. Now the largest group of voters in North Carolina, they tend to vote Democrat. So that is a very possible scenario in which you're going to see a lot of interest in at least those issues. Student loans would be another issue that would be a big youth issue, and inflation, the economy, things like that. But I'm not sure, even if there are issues and there are big issues in the campaign, I'm not sure we're going to see what you and I might term a reasoned debate on it. I think the level of truthiness and just outright lies and made up stuff is going to be injected into every debate we have. And it'll be up to us and the voters to sift through it all and try to get at the truth.
Well, we're glad you're going to be, at least for readers of NC Policy Watch, providing some of that content. So folks, be sure to check it out online. Kirk, we will undoubtedly talk to you multiple times in the coming months. Thanks so much for being with us today, and we'll be watching for your stories on NC Policy Watch.
Well, thanks a bunch. You take care, Rob. We'll see you.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncpolicywatch.com. You can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries on Apple Podcasts. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.